The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Phil Pullet digging away near side. Coyle bounces in there. It's wrenched to the far side, and that'll do it. The Detroit Red Wings win the first meeting of the season against the Boston Bruins by a final of 4-2 here at the Little Caesars Arena.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning as we take you up until 11 o'clock. Ryan Johnston joined here in the Town Fair Tire Studios by Judd Surratt and Bob Beers, fresh back from that matchup in Detroit last night. Rare Saturday night off for the Bruins and a Sunday night game at the Garden tomorrow night against the Philadelphia Flyers. A lot to get to this week. Good morning, guys.
Very fresh.
Good morning.
What time did you guys get in last night?
Two-ish?
Yeah, that's not too bad.
I mean, home, two-ish.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not,
no,
that's
not too
bad. Of course,
bad.
I'm pretty close to the airport, so I don't know. Longer ride, probably a little longer. So.
What happened last night?
They didn't have it. They didn't have it. It was just, I mean, you know, you look for kind of trends, right? In Pittsburgh, just a terrible second period. Actually, it wasn't a great start either, but a terrible second period. Took Marchand's heroics, you know, throughout that game to kind of pull them through. 5-point night for him. Then they go up to Montreal, play the back-to-back game. They weren't great. Tuukka wasn't great. You know, it was off night for him, admittedly so. But they battled. They hung in there. You know, it was an off night for the top line. Pastrnak had a power play goal in that game, but they were off a little bit. And then last night, top line didn't have a lot. You know, the frustration, I think, showed a little bit. I don't know if it was frustration or trying to get the team going with Marchand dropping the gloves in the second period. But second or third period? Second period. But, they didn't have a lot, and the team didn't have a lot yesterday. And then the penalty killing let them down. I mean, you know, Detroit came in as the 28th-ranked, team in the league on the power play. They had one guy in Fabry, and he scores two goals. You know, and he can score some goals. And, you know, when you get a new address, sometimes it's a new lease on life for a skilled guy like him. And he got two good passes and, you know, two one-timers, and the puck was in the back of the net. So it wasn't – they want to get back to playing some better defensive hockey yesterday, but they really didn't have the jump necessary to help them offensively against Detroit. I thought Detroit played pretty well, but, you know –
it's a team you got to beat.
It's a game you expect to win.
Well, and the other thing, when you talk about trends, one of the things that we've seen here over the last couple of games is that after the Bruins score, the other team will come back immediately on the next shift or the shift thereafter and answer back. And that's what happened last night. You get off to a 1-0 lead 69 seconds into the game. Dylan Larkin goes wide.
He goes wide,
pops out in front.
I think everybody felt that, yeah.
Rask makes the stop. Ricochet bounces off some of the traffic out in front. It might have been Patrice Bergeron in the net. All of a sudden, it's a 1-1 game. You know, and now the Red Wings have some life and they have some belief. I know one of the things that we had talked about heading into the game is if you looked at their previous two losses in regulation, you can say they were somewhat tainted. The one in Colorado, the one in
Montreal.
Not last night. The Red Wings were a better team.
Yeah.
They outplayed the Bruins.
Bruins didn't have it yesterday. They didn't have it, and now it's time to get back on. I mean, two-game losing streak in regulation, both by one goal. I mean, yesterday was an empty netter, but, you know, we haven't had this yet this year. So this is the stuff that faces all teams in the league.
Yeah, you don't play any two perfect games.
It hasn't happened yet for the Bruins, so now it's time to get back at it.
And this is a different month. You know, when you start October, I think every team around the National Hockey League, certainly a team like the Bruins, you know, you've got some jump and some energy. You're excited. The season is starting. You want to establish yourself. You want to establish your identity. We're into November now. So now you're starting to get into the regular pace of the league. Obviously, we're far from the dog days, but, you know, now it's grinded out time.
I mean, it's weird, and it happens across all sports that, you know, a team comes out and almost feels contagious at times where, you know, guys are just having trouble doing simple things. I mean, last night there was a couple of plays where guys just carrying a puck through the neutral zone, nobody around him, and the puck just squirts away from him for no reason. You know, it was just that kind of thing. It was so out of character.
You know who
for
had
this
an
team.
Off night for the first time, I think, all year? Was 88.
Yeah.
He had an off night. A couple of offensive zone penalties. How many times he went off sides. He has been so good. He's been just outstanding. And it's so fun to watch. I mean, it really is. And he had a great spinorama in the first period where, you know, all of a sudden you score that goal, maybe things are a little bit different.
Sure.
You know, I hate to be the defenseman playing against him. You know, when he's coming down, he's got just this array of moves, and that one was coming down the off wing and spun around on, I think it was Hronek, and he had a good chance there on Bernier, wasn't able to finish, but he had an off night, and he wasn't alone. So, you know, look, it's going to happen. It happened. Time to move on. Time to move forward. And, you know, let's just get out in front of it before, you know, I think the good teams have, you know, they lose one or two games, and then that's it. Then they get back to the way that they need to play. So this team has lost two games in regulation now, and see if they can get back to the way that they need to play against Philadelphia on Sunday.
It's funny you say off night for David Pastrnak. That just means he didn't score a goal in most cases at this point in the season. If he doesn't score on a particular night, it's like, wow, he had an off night.
Oh, and he got robbed right at the tail end of the second period.
Yeah,
and
that
was a spectacular save.
Yeah. But I think, second period, and then I think he hit the crossbar, but I think Bergeron tipped that one on the way in, the one that hit the crossbar and out in the third period. So he still had chances, you know, even on an off night.
All right, let's open it up to your calls here this morning, 617-779-0985. Maria in Watertown is up first. Good morning, Maria.
Hi, good morning. How are you? I was very, very, I think, frustrated by the loss to Montreal, but disappointed with the loss last night because I really did expect the Bruins to come back out after that frustration in Montreal, skating, you know, hard, hitting hard, making plays, and it just seemed to me like they never got their skating legs going. They seemed to be standing around quite a bit, and, you know, I think maybe some of this is a learning for them in terms of, you know, when you're one of the better teams in the league and you're at the top of your game, teams are coming after you, and they're going to bring their best every night, because that's a stepping stone for them to be able to say, we beat one of the elite teams. And it seems like they need to figure that out and be ready for that. And just frustration for me also, and I'm sure Billy will talk about this at some point, but video review, you can flush it down the toilet in all sports as far as I'm concerned. When it takes 3 minutes with all the technology available to review a play and have fans sitting at home, fans sitting in the stands, coaches twiddling their thumbs, waiting, then you're not doing it right. After a minute, you can't figure it out. The call on the ice, the call on the field stands and move on. It's ridiculous. Thanks for the time, guys.
All right. Appreciate the call, Maria. I mean, I think it's telling that this becomes a topic on this show pretty much weekly at this point. That,
it's not just here, though.
I know. I understand.
It was in the World Series. We see it in the NFL. I don't watch a whole lot of NBA, but I think I was recently reading something the other day about how there was an issue with replay. I think it was Doc Rivers that brought it up. So it's in every sport. The way these things are getting looked at, the judgments that are being made, the explanations that are or are not given to us, all of that stuff has to get better. But I think she's exactly right with a lot of the things that she talked about, just talking about the Red Wings. Matt Grizzlick had mentioned it before the game. What are your keys heading in? Don't pay attention to the record. Be ready. And for the Red Wings, Dylan Larkin had mentioned part of our success last year, and they had won 3 of the 4 meetings against the Bruins, is because they rose to the challenge. They enjoyed that challenge. And that line has been a handful for the Bruins.
Yeah. The Bruins were the best winning percentage in the league going into last night. I don't think it's a learning curve for them. I think that they have the leadership. I think they hit a bit of a wall. I really do. I mean, and I'm disappointed because I you want to get every point you possibly can, but it's going to happen during a season. So it's for me, it's what happens now moving forward, you know, how quickly you pull yourself out of it, because there's been some leaks lately for them. I mean, you allow four goals against Pittsburgh, you allow five goals against Montreal. So and different ways, right? I mean, I know that Rask had an off night against the Canadiens, but there's been some breakdowns defensively for them. So I want to see them get back to that kind of structure, and then the other stuff will come. So just playing the game the right way. So, you know, even if you're getting W's, maybe there's some leaks that are showing and some things that are showing, and you need to get those things shored up. So, you know, all right, you lose a couple games of regulation. Yeah, one of them is against the Red Wings, the worst team in the league mathematically, but I don't think it's so much of a learning curve. I really do. I think any team is capable of being any team, and we've seen that throughout the season. The Red Wings are not as bad as their record. I wanted to see a W, don't get me wrong, but okay, all right, let's get back to playing the way we need to play here. Maybe it's a little bit of a, I don't know if it's a wake-up call or whatever, just, all right, you know, let's get back to it. I really think they just hit a wall. I mean, we've seen this team play.
Yeah, I mean, clearly they weren't playing anywhere close to the level that they're capable of.
We've seen this team play really good hockey. Yeah. So, and they're the number one team in the league percentage-wise. I don't know what they are today. I haven't looked, but going into last night's game, they're right there. They're right where they should be. You're going to lose some games like this during a year, but how quickly you get out of it.
Yeah, and you know, do you give up, like you said, I mean, four goals in three straight games. That's not their game. You know, that's not what we've become accustomed to with this team for a long time. So, you know, can they clamp down tomorrow night against Philly? You know, you go out and win that game, you give up a goal or two, like, yeah, you know, everything's back to normal.
Exactly.
617-779-0985. More of your calls coming up. The Sports Hub Hockey Show continues.
Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning, 617-779-0985 to join us. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, all here in the Town Fair Tire Studios. John, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a big fan of Cassidy's. I love him as a coach. I think he's an awesome coach. I just didn't like his decision yesterday of dressing Camphor and not using him as a fourth-line winger or possibly as a defenseman. I mean, because I think double-shifting a lot of the players, I think two of the team kind of out of whack, and I think that's the reason why they didn't play too good yesterday. I don't know. I just think the guy's a defenseman, so what makes you think he can't play a regular role as a fourth-line winger? I just thought that was it was poor decision on Cassidy's part. And as far as last year, as far as the Bruins not winning the Cup, I think his decision-making on not dressing Backes last year was also the reason why they didn't win the Cup. That's just my opinion, guys. Thanks for taking my call, and you guys got a great show. Thank you.
Appreciate the call, John. I mean, it's two different positions. I mean, this is not
– Well, when you lose, it's always open for second-guessing, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, you know, you win the game, nobody's even talking about it. Look, he wasn't supposed to play. He wasn't scheduled to play. Could you have used him in certain situations? Yeah, you could have. They didn't. They made that choice not to. They made the choice to try to use double shifts, certain wingers and certain centers. They, you know, at one point, the first period, they used centermen down there, and they, you know, that moves Wagner back over to his natural side, the right wing, and Corrali on the left wing. You know, the next period, they kind of used some wingers in that position. So, you know, you double shift some guys, you try something. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. They didn't win last night. You second guess if you want, but I feel, you know, bad for Stephen Camphor, who had to sit there all night. But you know, I don't know. Maybe he knew it going in. You know, Judd asked me if I've ever sat out in a game, like, you know, dressed and sat out. I had a game where I just played power play, so I got, you know, four shifts. You know, so. Yeah. It took me back, and I told Judd, I don't know if Judd knew the story, but it took me back to the mid-90s when Steve Casper was the coach, and the Bruins played Hockey Night in Canada in Toronto, and Kevin Stevens and Cam Neely sat on the bench the entire game.
Wow.
Never got a shift.
Wow.
Cam
so
Neely
it can happen,
Kevin Stevens.
So it can happen to those guys. Wow. It can happen to anybody.
Never got a shift.
Wow.
Hockey Night in Canada, in Toronto.
It's only the biggest game, you know. It's as big a regular season game as you can get, right?
I think I have those facts right. Never got a shift.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just going back to Camfer, though, one more time, I think the other thing that made things a little bit tougher for the coaching staff, and I would agree, listen, anytime you're going to lose, you can question any number of decisions. But the Bruins, they started to trail early in the game.
Yeah.
So after Larkin ties it up, Fabry scores in the power play, scores again, then the Red Wings take a two-goal lead early in the second period, 90 seconds in. So now you're having a battle from behind. And if that's the case, you know, Bruce Cassidy has to try and go to his best players after a couple of days off to try and get the team back in. And I'd have to take a look at the final sheet again, but I think David Pastrnak led all skaters in ice time.
Over 23.
Night.
Yeah.
We had the over-under at 22 when I found out Richie wasn't coming.
So he
lost that one.
He beat McAvoy by 7 seconds last night for most ice time.
Right. And that, you know, that's going to happen when you're playing from behind. And, you know, that's why teams in the bigger picture, it behooves you to try and get out to a good start and get a lead, get that first goal. Why? Because you don't have to expend as much energy to try and get yourself back into the game. It's a lot easier to manage the game if you're in front.
Well, you're also, I mean, if you're, you know, you get up by two goals instead of down by two goals, you know, defensive posture there, Camfer helps you in that regard.
Well, and let's even compound that. So second period, you got the long change when a lot of coaches will shorten the bench anyway because of what's happening. And, you know, you're not going to play your checkers as much because you need a goal in that situation.
January 1996. Neely, along with teammate Kevin Stevens, I'm reading from an article, dressed for a game against Toronto Maple Leafs in January of 1996. As if it were any other game, the difference on that night, club's leading scorer was stapled to the bench for the duration of the match.
Man.
It's actually an article. It's five worst coaching moments. Mario Tremblay left Patrick Roy for 9 goals.
That ended his tenure, right? That was when he said, I'm out of here.
Wayne Gretzky didn't take part in the shootout in Nagano. Casper leaves Neely on the bench, and then the other one, another one was Tortorella storming the Calgary Flames locker room when he was coaching.
The head coach of Vancouver. Yeah. One season.
One guy's opinion of the top five worst moments.
Let's go to Ian in the car. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Morning.
Morning.
Good morning. All right. So my question is more towards the Bruins' toughness. I understand Marchand dropping the gloves. They're just trying to spark the team a little bit there. But is he really the guy that should be doing that? Do they have that toughness on the team? I know Backus didn't dress. I know Richie didn't dress. But who's the next man up to spark that type of emotion? You can't lose
Kevin Miller didn't dress.
Marchand for five teams. Yeah, Kevin Miller. You can't lose Marchand for 5 minutes when you're down 2 goals. Then you lose Pastrnak for 2 stupid penalties for 4 minutes. You know, that's a third of their time on the ice is spent in the penalty box. You know, do you think that there's somebody else that should be stepping up to elicit some emotion from the team?
I appreciate the call, Ian. I mean, again, you guys kind of listed off some of the guys who aren't in the lineup that might take that role. I don't know what you guys thought about what happened with Marchand leading up to that, but I thought that was – there might have been a little sense of trying to wake his team up, but I thought that also kind of came about organically because he threw a hit – down by the Detroit net right before that it looked like they took a little exception to, and Athanasiu, it kind of grew out of that.
Athanasiu hit Grizzlick.
Yeah.
Look, you know, Judd said to me during a commercial break, he's like, you know, a few years ago, this type of game would have drawn some, you know, some running around, you know, to try to get yourself going. And it was right after that, right coming out of the commercial break, that Marchand dropped the gloves. I think that, you know, like it or not, today's game, yeah, you would have loved to have seen some guys just to try to find some energy, kind of running around, throw some hits, and really get going. They just never had it. They just didn't. And how many fights have we seen this year? We've seen two. And we're 16 games into the season. It just doesn't happen anymore. It's not, like I said, like it or not, it's not the way it is anymore. But can you run around? Can you find some energy? Can you have some energy shifts? Yeah, you can. And they didn't have that. Not enough.
I think that there's some validity to some of this topic that we're talking about. I think if you're on the bench, and certainly Brad Marchand could sense it, I think a lot of guys on the team could try and sense it. Okay, how do we get ourselves going? How do I get ourselves emotionally engaged into the game? You want that to be up and down your bench. So when you're on the ice, within the context of the game, because that's really what we're talking about at this point, because dropping the gloves is a very rare occurrence, even for a team like the Boston Bruins right now. You know, how do you get yourself engaged within the context of the game? That's making a play, that's making a big hit, that's a game-changing shift down low where you see, like, maybe one of your lines, one of your four lines, digging away down low, keeping the puck in for a good 45 seconds, then all of a sudden maybe things could turn. You could see the game starting to turn toward the Bruins. It was tilting that way late in the second period. Marchand has the bout. Torrey Crew gets credit for the goal, although we think that that might have been Patrice Bergeron. We'll find out maybe here in a couple of days. Pastrnak gets robbed by Jonathan Bernier, and then the period runs out, and then Detroit had a chance to recapture its game. They shut it down in the third period, and it was hard for the Bruins to try and
Boston was down a goal in the third period. They had four shots.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one hit the crossbar, but they had four shots, and they had a power play in the third, so they didn't have it. It's just, it's plain and simple. It was one of those nights. They didn't have it.
Shoots and refs flashed off the glove. Take it away.
It's the Hockey Show.
Centered fire, they score.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's streaming on the Sports Hub app.
Back here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Coming up at the end of this segment, we will give you a chance to win tickets to see the Bruins and the Flyers tomorrow night at the Garden. More details on that coming up. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers, now joined here in the Town Fair Tire Studio by Ty Anderson of 98.5thesportshub.com. Good morning.
What's going on?
How are things?
They're all right. Came out to a parking ticket this morning. Pretty sour about that. But I'm all right.
Good way to start your day.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Look like you're dressed for winter.
It's very cold up there.
You say
Bob,
so.
Bob shrugs and
I know people are playing golf today.
No way, really?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, after the frost delay.
Yeah. I got up, I looked at my phone, it said it feels like 20 degrees out. I went, I'm going to dress for 20 degrees. I'd rather be too warm than too cold.
Right.
It is not, however, 20 degrees in the studio, and you're still dressed for 20 degrees. So
I committed to it. Now it'd be too long to take it off.
What did you see out of the Bruins this week?
The first two games, I thought defensively there were too many lapses, and then last night just low energy, I thought. And it picked up in the second half, but to sort of have that start against Detroit, you're asking for trouble because of the way they've started the year. That's a hungry team, desperate team. So I didn't love this week. I think a lot of the things are correctable and a lot of things they'll work through. To Bob's point, to you guys' point earlier, these games are going to happen. Like, it's going to happen over the course of an 82-game season. So it's all correctable. I worried about the first two games more than I did last night for whatever reason. Just I want to see them tighten up defensively, because that's the one thing that can really undo a team, is if you give them up these easy goals. And even last night, Cassie talked about, you know, you can give up one goal open in the slot like that in the power play, but it can't be two. So these are all correctable mistakes, but kind of an ugly week in terms of D-zone play, in my opinion.
They came into the game, right, fifth in the penalty kill, third in overall team defense. You know, but it's been trending that way. This week has been trending that way. Not so much the penalty kill, but just defensively in the breakdowns that they've had. And it's not, you know, it's important to say, like, it's a group effort, right? You know, should Rask have made some saves against Montreal? Yes. Was the coverage where it needed to be? No. You know, like, there's a lot of mistakes you can point out in certain, whether it be line changes, whether it be, you know, the mistakes in the defensive zone, whether it be something in the neutral zone that they didn't cover correctly. There's, you know, they're always reviewing tape. They're always reviewing the video and showing guys, you know, the mistakes that are made. But it's how quickly you can pull yourself out of it. Teams are going to go through this. And the Bruins are a good, structured team defensively. And Judd was just reading me some comments from Bruce Cassidy last night, you know, just talking about, look, we need a good defensive effort collectively, not defensemen, not goaltender, not, you know, forwards, collectively, everybody, good defensive effort, play the way that we need to play, you know, we're in a game that we don't need to score a lot of goals. So that's what they need to get back to, and that's their foundation. The goals will come, and they started putting up a lot of goals here recently. Right, they were scoring through the roof here for a while, and even, you know, up until last night. But so those goals will come, but they need to get back to that foundation, and that's something that they're going to shoot for here over the next over the next few games.
Well, I mean, we talked for, you know, the much of the first month of the season about where secondary scoring, got to develop some secondary scoring. We're starting to see that. Like, I mean, we're getting goals from some guys a little bit further down the lineup. Krejci scored last night. Like, you're getting some of the young guys have chipped in this week. That's a good sign that it's not just going to be about the Bergeron line all year.
Yeah, exactly. And last night, it's tough to sort of judge because they were playing with 11 forwards. Like, mm-hmm. and you could see them kind of just cycling different guys through, trying to find something. The third line, I think, took a step back last night. But again, does that change because you only have 11 forwards? You know, I like what... That second line, again, I've said it again and again, that's the key to this year because you're going to have nights where the Bergeron line is fighting it or they're not scoring for whatever reason. So you need those guys to come through. Krejci getting on the board, I want to see more of that. I think that he has an underrated shot and he's utilized it a little bit more out of the gate this year, but I want to see him take more charge on that line in terms of shooting the puck.
He was good last night. He had a goal and an assist. He was effective. He had some other opportunities. I thought Charlie Coyle looked good last night. He's shaking off defenders, taking pucks to the net. And I thought it was fascinating. Bruce Cassidy said that I like the way he plays with Anders Bjork and a guy like Senishin because when he's playing with the young players, he's forced to be even more assertive in his play, taking the puck to the net. I think one of the things that's been talked about with a guy like Charlie is it's almost like basketball, taking the ball to the rim. And I think that they want to see a little bit more from Charlie Coyle in that area, but he looks a lot more effective. I thought that line in particular, while they may not have been as noticeable the other night in Detroit, they were in Montreal. They were a big reason why the Bruins were able to rally.
They were good in Montreal. I mean, Senishin, he didn't play much last night. He played under eight minutes, you know, where Coyle was playing almost 18. So, you know, he was good in Montreal. They finally credit him with the assist that he was deserved and probably should have had another one if that offside call was called differently. But, you know, for him, one game is okay. It's what you do moving forward. It's more than one game. You know, you got to bring it every night. And clearly the trust wasn't there last night.
Well, Ty, let's talk about it because you wrote about Senishin this week about, look, a lot of people are kind of in a rush to call this guy a bust, right? I mean, we all know how that draft went and you know where he was taken. Your thoughts on what you've seen from him this time around, but also kind of the development as in total.
Yeah, so last night my column went right out the window because he didn't play a lot, but but I would say that entering last night, the two he's played three games, the two games that mattered, if you will, the Minnesota game and the Montreal game, I thought he looked good in both those games. I thought he looked like an NHL player and he was playing with NHL talent. And I think that everyone looks at the league now because you have so many 19-year-olds that come in and just dominate right away that's the only way to make it, right? You can't spend more than 100 games in the AHL. Not that he wants to, per se, but he was always a project. He was always a long-term project for them. And so he's played a ton in the AHL, and he comes up, and he has results, you know, right away. I know it's empty net goal in Minnesota, but he had a good game before the empty net goal, in my opinion. So I look at that, and I say, okay, well, he's looking fine in his NHL debut here. But again, to your point, it's beyond that, right? It's what can you do after that? So I want to see him, if he gets another shot on Sunday night, I want to see him have a better game. But I think we rush to call people busts, and it's the 2015 class is a loaded class. You look at it, there's so many players that came out of there. So he's behind schedule compared to those guys. But when I look at him, I don't want to say he's a bust because A, he's 22, and B, he's played four NHL games so far.
I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility, and you know, that a guy can develop a little slowly. I mean, I heard, I don't know if it was you or someone else that I heard the other day talking about Brad Marchand and his development.
Over 100 AHL games, began his career as a fourth liner and worked its way up.
Right.
There are
more
than one way.
How many games did Krejci play in the AHL?
There's a lot, right? I mean, he made his debut in 06-07 and didn't break through as a full-timer until the following year. And even then, he stepped up for an injured Mark Savard that year, and that was really sort of his moment. It wasn't until 08-09 where you're like, wow, this guy's an NHL player.
I mean, I think there is sometimes there's an expectation. Okay, you get drafted here. Like, you should jump right into the NHL. You should be able to contribute right away. It's not necessarily that way for everyone. But I think, you know, now, you know, especially the way his season started down in Providence, it's like people look at the numbers down there. It's like he wasn't even producing, you know, goals in the AHL. So, like, how's he ever going to be a quality player at this level? I think that's what people see. And now, you know, when he gets the opportunity, you know, has a good game, and then, as a lot of these guys do, that next game, you know, maybe it's not there, and developing that consistency is really the key to sticking at this level.
So I think that's sort of the key, right? That last point, that's what they wanted him to have in Providence. He gets the call up to Boston after he has 3 points in 4 games down there, but they always seemed like, when you talk to Jay Leach and guys down in Providence, it's always like they wanted him to be a factor every night. If you're not scoring, find other ways to be a factor. And he had some shifts down in Providence that I saw that he was more of a forechecking menace than he was up here during the preseason, if you will. So I think that's been an area for them to sort of improve with him on, be a factor besides just being a scorer.
Well, so what are his biggest assets? Right, his speed. He's a good sized kid and his speed. If you're not scoring, what are you doing with your speed? Are you disrupting? Are you getting in there on the forecheck? Are you moving without the puck to make yourself available? Or, you know, those are the type of things, and you know, I didn't see it in preseason from him really at all. In the games that I saw, didn't see every one of them, but I didn't see it from him. You know, but I saw it more against Montreal. I saw it against Minnesota last year in the game you referenced. You know, he was a factor even if he wasn't scoring. He was a factor. And he was, you know, the one of the goals in Montreal was a good example. You know, soft chip by Coyle into the zone. Senishin's first guy in. All of a sudden, you know, puck's in the back of the net. I think that was Bjork's goal against Montreal. But that's something that he can do, even if he's not scoring. He was a scorer in junior. But you can't just blow by guys and score in the NHL. It's not going to happen. You know, I mean, you got to be a special talent in order for that to happen. So find other ways to utilize your speed.
I think you can put Anders Bjork in this conversation because that's what we've seen since he's been called up. First game, terrific. Then, as the coaching staff, and I think that we've all had a chance to see, there was a drop-off. Started to pick it up a little bit. Did you notice him last night as much? Maybe not. But he's another guy with a lot of the same skill set as a guy like Senishin. Fast, score. What are you going to do if the offense isn't coming for you? How are you using your skill set to influence and impact the game? And he was recently sat down by the coaching staff. Hey, got to pick it up. This is part of what being a pro is about. You got, if it's not going to be an A game, give me your B game. Did we see that last night? Are we seeing that on a consistent basis if we're not seeing the A game?
Yeah, and that's sort of the big question for a lot of these guys, right? Like, we talked about this last week with pushing guys, right? We talked about Connor Clifton and pushing other players. It's the same thing up front. It's just right now they don't have the bodies to sort of do that, if you will, every night, given the injury situation.
Well, another guy that you could throw into the category is Solaric, right? I mean, that's, you know, there are times when he looks like he fits, and there are times when you don't notice him at all. And that's really what's holding him back from being a full-time NHL player.
He was more noticeable last night.
Sure.
Not just the assist, but he was more noticeable. Maybe the familiarity of playing with Krejci might have helped, but I noticed him a lot more.
I was waiting, though, last night. I was waiting for him to have sort of that breakthrough because we've been sitting on this for a long time with him. Like, is he an NHL player? Can he do this full-time? And last week, Cassie was critical of him. After the Ottawa game, he said he played an average game. So I thought, okay, now you're getting another chance. Yeah, an average game last week. You get the assist, but there were moments, I thought, later in that game where he could have made more of a difference.
No question. I said he was more noticeable.
Exactly, yeah. Small victories, I guess, right?
Well, and here's the thing. I think that usually the Bruins will call up the guy who earns it the most.
And the spot that they need. Judge.
And that's why they called up Solarik. I think, you know, you could have gone back and forth with him or Paul Carey, who also plays the left side. Yeah. You could have put him in that spot. We did see the Bruins do that in the past. I think they wanted to give Solarik another look playing on the left side with David Krejci because it has had some glimmers of success in the past.
No, that makes sense. That totally makes sense. I'm still waiting for that breakthrough to come. And now I'm at the point where I'm like, I don't know if it's going to happen here for whatever reason. I don't know if it's going to happen.
And for some guys, it doesn't happen, or it may happen somewhere else. I mean, it's, you know, right? It's just for whatever reason, it doesn't click until they get a chance somewhere.
Well, you really want to magnify it, though, when you put him in the right spot. You know, if you bring up a score and put him just in general with guys who don't normally score or defensive-minded players, it's hard to say, well, where was the offense? Where was the playmaking ability? But if you're putting him in a position that he's comfortable with, that he's accustomed to, that's when you can really zero in. And for a guy, and he knows this is his third kick at the can this year. He's had a number of different chances here in Boston. That time is starting to run out.
But that also goes back, Judd, to, you know, the point that Ty and Bob were making in that, look, if you bring in Solarik and you don't put him with Krejci, but you throw him on the fourth line, and it's like it's not the perfect role for him. Well, you still have to make something out of it. Right, you're still given an opportunity, and that's where your other skills need to come into play here. And if you can't, then it does draw into question, well, you know, can you play at this level full time?
Because at the end of the day, if the Bruins are 100%, Jake DeBrusk is David Krejci's left wing. Like, you got to find another way to contribute. You have to find another spot in this lineup that you can fit in. Right now, I don't think there's a lot of those. And at the same time, Solarik, you know, he fits under the surplus, right? They have so many left shot, natural left wingers that you got to do something to put yourself beyond the pack.
Well,
so
they've got to do something to bring in a right wing.
Oh, yeah. That's what they need. But I think in the big picture,
with the surplus of left wingers that they have, they need to go and do something to bring in a right wing.
We're talking about things, you know, these are what pro players do. They bring it every night. Why do we love, you know, the leadership core of the Bruins? Because of their professionalism, because of the way that they're able to bring it across an 82-game season. If you stay in the American Hockey League longer, there's a greater chance that you're going to learn that. There is no harm in staying down there and learning how to become a pro. You talked about Connor Clifton. Maybe he's a little bit ahead of the game because he spent a little bit more time in Providence, because he's a little older. He's 24. Zach Senyshyn's 22. And it doesn't sound like much of a difference, but it does because of the time that he spent down there learning to become a pro.
Yeah, Krejci spent almost 100 games down there early in his career. Kevin Miller, Marchand, Jake DeBrusk, full season down there before they brought him up. Heinen spent significant time down there. You know, he's still kind of waiting for him to pop a little bit more offensively. But, you know, these guys all spent time. You know, it takes special players to be able to just step right in and play. It's not a bad thing to be down there, but what do you do when you're down there? You know, and they're going through that with some of the guys that are down there right now. And then some guys that are never make the jump. You know, I've played with so many guys who put up, you know, tons of points in the minor leagues, and they just could never make the transition to the NHL. And they ended up being a career minor league guy. Made a good living.
When I was calling games in the AHL, I saw guys who scored 50 in the AHL who couldn't make it in the NHL.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you look at their stats. What the hell is this guy still doing here? And then you see him play, and it's like that's all he does. He doesn't. If he's not scoring, which he's not going to score 50 at the show, there's no way he can play up there.
That was Chris Bourque, right? Chris Bourque was one of those guys.
I was thinking about a different guy, but yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, even Paul Carey is a point per game.
Tons
guy.
Of examples.
Yeah. He's a point per game guy in the AHL. Paul Carey is up here. He's more of an effort guy, and you love those guys. But you know that there is how can you have your game translate, right? If you can't get the points, what can you do? So some of these guys, like Senyshyn, I think he can do more. Solarik, I don't know if he can do more.
Just quickly before we let you go, defensively, and we talked about, you know, things got a little leaky at times this week, whether it be Rask not playing particularly well up in Montreal or just, you know, giving up 4 goals last night. Penalty kill wasn't great. We've seen Bruce Cassidy, you know, tinker with the combinations a little bit. What do you think about that, giving guys a little bit different look, particularly taking McAvoy away from Chara at this point?
You know, I didn't hate the idea of it, but I kind of like Chara with McAvoy. I just think that you know what you're getting out of that. I think with McAvoy and Grizzlick, it's a little bit more adventurous, which maybe that will help you later down the line. But I think right now, as we said earlier, you want to get back to that strong defensive game. I think you get that with McAvoy and Chara together more than you do with Grizzlick and McAvoy together.
All right. Ty Anderson, 98.5thesportshub.com. You can read his stuff on the Bruins and everything else. Appreciate it as always.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
The black and gold freight train.
All things Bruins and the NHL. It's the Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
At 98.5, the Sports Hub. It's hour number two of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 617-779-0985 for you to join us. Quick note for those of you who are out and about this morning. Got a truck storrowed itself on the Mass State Police. Storrow Drive inbound at North Harvard Street in Boston closed due to overheight truck with equipment striking overpass, causing equipment to fall off and several cars struck with debris. Traffic being diverted off of Storrow. No injuries. I don't understand how that happens that often. There's big signs there. Like, there's big, huge signs every which way.
I could see myself doing it, honestly. Just putting it in cruise control, not paying attention, forgetting I was in a truck, and just, yeah.
For those of you who are out on a Saturday morning, you're dealing with that this morning. Ryan Johnston, Judd Surratt, Bob Beers with you here in the Town Fair Tire Studios, talking about the Bruins week, coming off a win over Pittsburgh on Monday night. The losses to Montreal on Tuesday and then to Detroit last night. I want to pick up.
Joe, did you have a scoring update?
Oh,
yes. the Red Wings off-ice officials have tweeted out that last night's goal that was originally credited to Torrey Krug is now Patrice Bergeron from Krug
they
and
worked,
Krejci.
They worked all night on that.
It took him until this morning to figure that one out.
Couldn't have done that last night.
The one that we saw. Happened as it happened.
Couldn't have taken the intermission. Maybe pushed away from the nachos and just still fixed it right there.
And the Montreal official scores. I don't know. I don't know if it's the official scores that do it or if it's the NHL that does it. Seneschal went from no points against the Canadiens to two assists. The day after the game.
And should have had three.
Yeah, well, that's a conversation for...
So that
I'm not going to pull the band-aid.
That's a conversation for 10:30.
So last night's scoring change ends David Pastrnak's point streak.
Exactly. He had the secondary assist, and that's gone now.
Yeah, so it does have a little implication in that. All right, so I wanted to pick up kind of where we left off with Ty last hour, that I asked him about mixing up the D pairs. McAvoy with Grizzlick, Chara with Clifton. A little bit of a different look employed by Bruce Cassidy than what we would normally see. What do you think the impetus for that was? How do you think it plays out in practice?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind and the thing that they talked about was freeing up McAvoy to be a little bit more offensive. You know, he's not straddled with having to take on the top line from the other team night after night. You know, and maybe he can free him up to be a little bit more offensive, a little bit more. You know, get up and go, which is his game. Maybe that confidence was wearing on him a little bit as well. You know, offensively, I'm talking about, you know, because he's capable of putting up points. There's no question. He's capable of making plays coming up the ice. We saw a couple of examples of it last night. We've seen examples of it throughout his short career. But, you know, with him, I believe that, you know, I liked what Bruce Cassidy said in the morning about, look, we want him to be, I'm paraphrasing, but be a difference maker and we'll live with some of the consequences. In other words, you know, if you're going to try certain things, there are going to be some mistakes that come along with it. But we'll live with those because the good's going to outweigh the bad because of what he's doing. I like it. I really do. I think that the two of them, I mean, now, were they great last night? No, but nobody was. So
sure.
Let's, you know, let's not read too much into one game. You know, even Clifton, you know, the Larkin goal, I know it goes off of Bergeron's leg, but that's the speed by Larkin surprised Clifton a little bit, I think. Even though he kept him wide, he kind of, you'd like to try to, easier said than done, you'd like to stop him a little bit further up the ice, but they got Larkin in some open ice. He's got so much speed. You gotta respect some of that, and it's not easy. And he forced him wide. He forced him around the net, and the save was made, and it was an unfortunate bounce. It went off of Bergeron's leg, but... You know, so let's see what maybe that looks like for a few games. you don't have to be married to it's got to be McAvoy and Char. And I think the one thing with, and Judd's heard me say this, look, Chara's got his assets and he's got things that he's very good at, and he's got things that, he's not as good at, and McAvoy wants to go. And sometimes when you're giving the puck over to Char, and especially as the game goes on and you're playing against other teams' top lines, it's a little bit more of a safer play and, he's not getting it back in full flight and going, and then you're playing against top lines, so you're maybe a little more reluctant to go. You're trying to find that line of when to go, when to stay back. You don't want to, you don't want to take chances that are unnecessary risks because you're playing against other teams' top lines. I'm a fan of it. I am, and I want to see a little bit more of it. I don't think one game is enough of a sample size. Now, which direction they go, I'm not sure. But because they've had some good success with McAvoy and Chara together and then Grizzlick and Clifton together as well. And Kevin Miller's getting a little bit closer to coming back too. So we'll see what direction they want to go. If Kevin Miller gets up to speed, you want to go Kevin Miller and Chara and then try Grizzlick and McAvoy for a little longer sample size. We'll see what direction they want to go. But I'm a fan of the idea. And let's see how it plays out.
I think they want to see if they can provide a little bit more balance up and down the pairs, in addition to try and coax a little bit more offense out of a guy like Charlie McAvoy. And yeah, you do want to see offense from Charlie. But for me, when I see Charlie on his game, he controls the
tempo. Just be a difference maker. Yeah.
Controls the tempo of the game because of how quickly he's able to transition pucks, the way he's able to skate and make decisions, getting the pucks into forwards' hands, using his feet. I think that will all come for him, and it's going to take a while. He's last year 7 goals, 28 points in 54 games. He had 79 shots in 54 games. He's still not a guy who's going to shoot the puck a lot. He has 16 shots in 16 games this year.
Yeah, there was an example last night. He took a shot from the point, and there was some traffic down there, but Krejci had kind of arced up high on the right side. It was on the power play. Krejci had kind of arced up high on the right side. You move the puck over to him, now he's got a lot of space to kind of penetrate into the right wing circle and make a play, whether it's a shot or a pass. So now the shot selection also becomes it. Okay, you got to shoot more. So now that gets in your head. Okay, I got to shoot more. Now you're not, you got to find the line and find that confidence level of when to pass, when to shoot, when to shoot with traffic, when to shoot with a purpose, looking for somebody to stick down low. There's a lot of things that go into it. So that's something that Krug's very good at. Even the goal last night that Bergeron scored. He's got his head up. He's looking down low. He's trying to find that stick. Bergeron's there. You could see him. He's not tapping his stick, but he's saying, "Here's my stick. Right. Find that stick." And the shot was a good one by Krug, and his wrist shot in. So there's different things you can do from the point to try to create that offense, but also what he does in the offensive zone. I'm talking about McAvoy, going in, going in deep, carrying the puck through the neutral zone, carrying the puck up the ice, making the first forechecker miss. Something he. When we saw him burst onto the scene, he'd go back for a puck, he'd have a guy on him, make that little one move, two moves, and then all of a sudden he's escaping and then coming up the ice, and that he's leaving that guy in the dust. We haven't seen a lot of that. And whether that's confidence or whether that's playing against the other team's top line or whatever it is, I just want to see him get back to more of his game. And his game, live with some of the mistakes, because his he can make a big difference when he's on his game.
There are so many people that compared him when he first burst down to the scene to a guy like Drew Doughty. Mm-hmm. Right-handed, similar body type. I think that Charlie can bring some offense to his game, but Doughty's on a different plane as an offensive player and as a mindset to influence the game in an offensive way. But listen, there's obviously some more in there with Charlie. But I don't know if the whole idea of comparing him to Drew Doughty and what Doughty can do offensively in a game is fair to Charlie. They're just different players.
Just from the perspective of the pairings, it's interesting to hear you guys talk about, the different aspects of it, because I always looked at, I think early in his career it was, Charo was getting minutes with Carlo, and it's like, okay, well, you've got the veteran there to kind of balance out the young guy who, when he makes a mistake, Char is there to help it out. I kind of looked at that McAvoy pairing the same way. You say, okay, well, here's a guy who you want to get engaged offensively. If he makes a mistake, Char is there to cover for it. It's a little bit of a different thing.
McAvoy and Carlo are different players.
They're much different players. But, it's you know, it, from the McAvoy perspective, though, having Grizzlick on the other side as opposed to having Chara, is it, it's less of a security blanket, it feels like to me.
In some ways. I mean, Grizzlick defends in his own way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he defends with his feet and his stick and his quickness, and, you know, it's a much different way of defending, but he's... Look, Chara's an elite, you know, shutdown guy. I mean, we know that. We've seen that. You know, but Grizzlick is, he defends pretty well. He defends pretty well.
I'm not trying
to
take anything away from him, yeah, but, you know, it's
just
not,
in a different way.
You know, it's like, I mean, due respect to Grizzlick, he's not a Hall of Famer yet. I mean, it's a different, you know, so if I'm McAvoy and they're trying to get me going offensively, it's, you know, well,
it's the puck moving.
I feel like I have to be even more careful.
It's the puck moving.
Yeah.
It's the puck moving. It's, you know, when you're moving it over to Grizzly, he's moving. And then you get it back, you're moving. It's just there's more movement to it, you know. And with Char, there's not as much movement. Does it work? I don't know. We've only seen it, you know, in small sample size. So we got to wait and see. But I think the theory is let's just get some movement there. That's my guess. I think that's one of the aspects to it.
How about the other part of it, which is putting Clifton in that, you know, in a different role?
Yeah, I think, you know, Clifton has done some good. What was the quote the other day, Judd?
We haven't seen as much Cliffy hockey. We saw some Cliffy hockey. I'm paraphrasing here, in Montreal.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, what a goal he scored against the Canadiens, right?
Yeah.
Threw a nice hit against Domi in the neutral zone. I think it was Domi, and he had the goal in the second period. You know, went in from the right point, moving, weaving his way through
bar
some
down.
Traffic there,
mm-hmm.
bar down. Yeah, and Carey Price. It's, you know, he's fun to watch when he's on, and, you know, we don't think we've seen it as much. You know, I think there's been a little drag in his decision-making sometimes with the puck and a little slow to move that puck or move his feet and move the puck, you know. So when he's moving and he's making plays that way, you know, he can be very, very effective, and he's a lot of fun to watch.
And he plays fearlessly,
yes.
And maybe we have not seen him push the envelope quite as much here over the last couple of weeks. Maybe he was certainly, there was an uptick in his game after he was sat out, because the Bruins wanted to see more from him. Mm. You know, it'll be interesting because in the big picture, Kevin Miller's getting close as you guys have talked about, and it'll be easy for the Bruins and Bruce Cassidy to just say, all right, when Miller's ready, we're going to put him back with Grizzlick. We're going to put McAvoy back with Chara. We know these things work, but let's
That's very possible.
Is there more that the Bruins can bring out of their decor if they juggle the pairs, you know, if McAvoy can stay with Grizzlick over a longer period of time? How does that impact what you're seeing from the Bruins night in and night out?
Shoe center fired,
score! The Hockey Show on your home of the Bruins, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It is the Sports Hub Hockey Show here on a Saturday morning. Let's get back to more of your calls. Paul, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, guys. You guys have been touching on the topic, but I've just been curious. When Miller and Moore come back from injury, they're going to have 9 defensemen. They have an option on Camper to send them down, but are they going to keep 8 defensemen? I feel like that would really kill their forward depth. I'll hang up and let you guys talk. Thanks.
I appreciate the call. This topic comes up every so often.
Let's see how healthy everybody is when they come back. And if everybody's healthy, then you have a dilemma, right? Then you have to make some decisions. Moore's not even skating yet, so we can't keep him in the equation at all. Not that I know of. I don't think he is. Miller's certainly getting closer, yeah. But you have things that you can do there. I don't think that you would keep Clifton here and sit him in the stands.
Right, if he's not going to play regularly,
because he doesn't have to clear waivers
to
go down.
Yeah.
So my guess is that's just, you know, hypothetically, if everybody's healthy when Miller comes back, my guess is that Clifton would go down and play. You would sit Camphor in the stands because that's what he signed on to do, is be, you know, I don't want to call it a fill-in. I want to call it a depth defenseman.
But that's
right?
The role, yeah.
It is the role. Be ready to play when called upon, but if everybody's healthy, you're probably not going to play. So I don't think there's real, I say dilemma, there's really no dilemma. I mean, that's probably what would happen. And I don't know this for a fact. I don't think Clifton has to clear waivers.
He does not.
So if he had to clear waivers now, you got a dilemma.
Right.
You know, because you probably don't want to lose him. You just sign him for a few more years. He's cost, I mean, you know, his numbers are very good. You know, moving forward, gave him an extension. So, you know, he's not a guy that you would want to lose for nothing. So I believe, because he does have some good value. So if he doesn't have to clear waivers, he'd be the guy that goes down. It's easy.
I think it's
unfortunately for him.
Yeah. Know. As we start to get deeper into the season and the games start to come a lot more frequently, things have a way of working.
12 defensemen used last year.
You know what? We talked. I think we mentioned this recently. Like, we talked about this last year. It's like they have too many defensemen. Yeah. Well, before long, yeah, they were digging into Providence trying to find guys who could play.
Had,
you know, a game or two at this
level.
They
had eight here to start the season, right? Yeah. I mean, Krug was hurt to start the season, but they had eight here, and you know, so and they ended up using 12 last year. It'll happen at some point. You know, unfortunately, it's just the way it is. So, but if everybody was healthy, that's the direction they would go, most likely.
All right, let's go to Ellis. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I too are wondering what they're going to do about defensively when everybody comes back healthy. Now, take, for instance, Krug. He's probably at his most valuable point right now. And are they going to sign him for more money than the $5 million he's making now? I don't think so. So would he go on the market? And the second thing is that Chara, he's everybody says, all the hockey experts says he's a shutdown guy, he's this, he's that, he's the next thing. What I see is people skating right around him, and also when he tries to clear the ice with those chip shots, he's not making it to the blue line. And, you know, to clear it, defensive men are grabbing those pucks and keeping it in the zone. I'd like to hear your comments.
Yeah, I'd love to see him clear more pucks, but they also have going into last night, they had the fifth best penalty killing in the league and the third best team defense, and Zdeno Chara is leading your team in plus minus.
And he's playing a lot.
He plays against the other team's top lines.
Right. Know, over 21 minutes. You know, as far as Torey Krug,
he stands out when he makes mistakes. I think we can agree on that.
Yeah, no,
But when you play that much against the other team's best lines night in and night out, yeah, he gets beat sometimes. Absolutely. And he gets away. If you got to go straight ahead speed and straight out speed, and you got a guy flying down the wing and he's got to turn, I'm not saying when he's just, he's already there and he's moving his feet. I'm saying when all of a sudden he's got to go from a standstill and turn and get back, it's going to happen sometimes. But he's your best option to shut down other teams. I mean, who do you want out there at the end of a game if you're protecting a lead?
I mean, he's my first choice.
You know, yeah. It is what it is right now. And he has his pluses, he has his minuses. And you use him in the right situations, he's leading the team in plus minus, and you've got one of the best defensive teams in the league for a number of reasons, not just him, obviously. So you live with some of the deficiencies at this point.
And for Torey Krug, he's definitely due a raise. The question is, how big a raise, what's the term going to be, and who's he going to get it from?
Are the Bruins in it to win a Stanley Cup this year?
You would certainly think so.
Torey Krug's not going to trade.
No. Yeah. I mean, I think somebody said that to me last night on Twitter. It's like, oh, you know, Torey Krug hasn't looked, you know, it doesn't look like the same guy. He's not going to make that much more. You know, they shouldn't pay him much more than he's making. I'm like, your power play is otherworldly right now. Even if you take away, you know, the rest of his game, like, why would you want to do anything to screw that part of it up?
I think last year in the playoffs, he proved that there's more to his game, too.
No question.
If he hadn't done it before, he proved it to a lot of people last year in the playoffs. I mean, he proved it to me prior to that, but you know, I think he opened up a lot of eyes in the way that he played in the entire playoff.
Let's try Rick in Rhode Island. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Good morning, guys. I was talking about, someone called in about team toughness. This team needs someone that can play the game but be a tough guy, kid like Michael Froehlich. I love that kid. It would have been great to have him on this team. Kevin Miller, they missed Kevin Miller. He would have been a difference maker in the Stanley Cup for them. And they miss Adam McQuaid, a free agent right now, I believe. I just read it the other day. I mean, he's someone that has everybody's back. They're taking runs at Grizzlick. They're taking runs at DeBrusque. They're taking runs at all these guys. Pasternak. They need someone to come in, take runs at their guys, but not take stupid penalties doing it. But they need some toughness on this team very badly, I think.
All right. Appreciate the call, Rick.
I'm always a fan of those kind of players. I mean, and I think, I do think that Kevin Miller could have made a big difference last year.
Any Cam Neely's?
I would have loved to have seen him play in that.
Well, that's the issue is that those players who we talked about. Look, we're not talking about guys who are just out there to fight. Clearly, that's a dinosaur in the NHL. But even the guys that you're talking about are few and far between around the league because it has become such a skill league. There are still guys that do that. There are still guys that are capable of doing that. But you know, the reality is that's not the NHL in 2019 anymore. And
no, the NHL in 2019-20 is suspending Milan Lucic for defending his goaltender after goaltender gets stuck and he goes and he throws a punch with his glove on and gets suspended for 2 games. That's the NHL.
Yeah.
Right now.
Two games for a punch.
For a glove on punch.
For a gloved on punch.
I wonder
punch.
If George Parros ever did that. I'd have to go through the footage. I'm just curious.
I don't have to go through the footage.
Now you jab a goalie and, you know, and get punched and coach says, good job, kid. If you get punched after jabbing the goalie and you come to the bench, the old-time coach is telling you, how come you let the guy punch you?
Right. But I also don't, you know, I don't sit here at this point in the season and say the Bruins are getting pushed around every night.
No.
I mean, that's not happening either. Like, guys are, you know, yeah.
You want a team that's complaining about team hits. Toughness? Toronto. Yeah. Listen to their complaints right now. They don't have any team toughness. And like, look, I've always said that toughness comes in a lot of different ways, right? And, you know, guys start – I think the Bruins have enough guys to answer if people start running around a little bit. You know, what happened against San Jose? You know, Kane starts running around a little bit. Chara starts chasing him down. Brett Ritchie drops gloves with Goudreau. You know, Backes throws a couple of hits. Richie Backes not in the lineup last night. Kevin Miller not in the lineup last night. I don't think they need to go out and get guys. I think they need guys to get healthy.
Just, yeah, as long as when they get healthier, they've got plenty of those guys, right?
Enough. Yeah.
Miss something?
This is a black and gold freight train.
Catch the Hockey Show podcast at 98.5thesportshub.com and the Sports Hub app.
Sports Hub Hockey Show. So we take you up until 11 o'clock. This time each week, we welcome in Billy Jaffe, of course, from Nesson. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning. How's everybody on this beautiful fall day?
Excellent. Exciting one for all of you guys last night. I mean, it was...
Very.
A lot to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about what's going on around the league, including some teams that the Bruins are going to see this week. The Toronto Maple Leafs coming up later on in the week. They've won 3 in a row. You know, we kind of came up in our conversation a little bit earlier, but are the Leafs starting to get their heads on straight?
Well, they got a big head back, put it that way, and I don't mean that in a cocky way. I mean that in a big leader, head of state, so to speak, for them, and John Tavares, and that I think gives them a little confidence. They're 3-0-1 in their last four. You know, the one loss was to Washington in overtime. They had a lead, and then they beat Philly and beat LA, and you know, then they ended up beating Vegas. It was a pretty good game against Vegas at Toronto. I think
they're
getting a little bit.
Play any of those games? I don't know. I'm asking. I'm not sure.
I don't believe so. I don't have it in front of me, but they were not back. I remember that they weren't back-to-back because I remember, Beersy, that they didn't have back-to-backs for a few weeks.
That's a no because Michael Hutchinson is 0-3-1.
Okay, then he hasn't played. There you go. So, yeah, with no back-to-back, it's a pretty good bet that Freddie Anderson is going to be the horse that's going to get saddled every time, which we've talked how many times. Could be the one of the big issues for this team come playoff time is that he'll be too tired in a 7-game series. He'll be too tired. So they're better, RJ. Tavares is still dealing with the finger injury. The first game back, a couple of games, he looked like he was in discomfort. He changed the pad that he had dealing with it a little bit more. Had an OT winner the other night. So they're looking better. They're still not dominating, but you know what, Mike Babcock, I'm paraphrasing, he said, "Hey, like let's hold on a second here." You know, where he was saying before the Vegas game, we've got points in four of our five games. We're doing pretty good here. Let's hold on a little bit. So they seem to be righting the ship a little bit up in TO.
While we're in the division, at what point does Tampa Bay start to get a little concerned? At 7-5-2, granted, it's not terrible, but it's not what we would expect out of that team.
Based on conversations I had with people around Tampa or involved with Tampa, it would be around Christmas, I guess, if they're really not changed and on the ascension, you know, ascending instead of descending and playing what they have talked about is a different way, is not as fancy or flamboyant or as open a style. If the feeling is, RJ and fellas, if Tampa is playing the right way around, you know, mid late December, to watch out, because then they could be in one of those aha moments where, you know, they're going to go on a run and get themselves ready for the playoffs. On the other hand, you know, we haven't seen much. They did win yesterday in Sweden. I know they played today. I don't remember what time. It's got to be in the afternoon given the time change. But they play the Buffalo Sabres again. So, I mean, you know, look, they had some injuries there, too. They did get Hedman back. They've been very loose at times with their defense. If they can get some structure, they'll be all right. But I would say mid-late December.
All right. Team at the top of the list in the Metropolitan Division, the Washington Capitals. Bruins, you know, out to a terrific start this year, obviously. So is Washington, 12-2-3. They've won five in a row coming into today. And realistically, I mean, you look at what's going on with that team, Carlson has gotten off to a terrific start.
Well, just to start with the team, and you're right, we'll talk about Johnny Carlson in a minute. They haven't had a regulation loss. I was looking this up yesterday or earlier this week since October 14th when they lost to the Colorado Avalanche. They lost that game 5-6-3. They've been on a roll. They've had to go some extra time lately, but man, oh man, they've been winning a ton. Munching up points. They had a win the other day in Florida. At the previous two games, fellas, they dominated. I watched a lot of those games. You know, Calgary and Buffalo. Even Calgary had a lead. That once Washington turned it on, they were just in beast mode against them. I mean, this is a team that's really, really deep. Really deep. I mean, guys like, you know, Tom Wilson, I know he plays top six for them, but, you know, he's not the first three guys you think about. You think of Ovechkin and Backstrom and Carlson, et cetera. They are very deep. I feel like, I don't know if you guys agree or not, if you had a chance to watch them, they're doing it in a very business-like approach, and Ovechkin seems to be leading the right way. And then you mentioned, John Carlson. Oh, my God, what a start to the season. I mean, record-setting pace for defenseman early on, just crushing it right now. You know, he seems to be in that mature spot. Beersy, being a former defenseman, you can speak to it. Late 20s, you know, pushing 30, confidence beyond belief, great hockey IQ, and on the power play, he's like Krug is to the Bruins. I mean, he runs that through him from the back end.
Yeah, he does it in a, like, he doesn't seem like he ever overextends himself either. You know what I mean? He does it in like a quiet way. I don't know how to describe it really, but I enjoy watching him play because he's a smart player. He knows the right plays to make. He puts the puck in the right areas. He knows when to shoot. He knows when to move it. You know, he distributes it at the right time. He's also got the ability to get the shots through from the point, but he shoots with a purpose. So, I mean, he does a lot of things in the smart way, you know, for Carlson. He's not flashy. He's not going to blow you away with his speed or anything like that. So, you know, you know, look at the season that Giordano had last year with Calgary. You know, he's not a fast guy, but he makes smart decisions. You know, he doesn't get himself out of position. He makes smart, you know, smart reads at the offensive blue line and plays in the offensive zone. And I see some of that from Carlson. I'm not saying that they're the same player, but I just see it's just not, he's not, he doesn't do it in a flashy way. He just does it in a smart way.
Well, he allows the guys that are flashier than him to do that, right?
Yeah. Well, he's got guys around him that can do that, sure.
Right. He's just, he is very, I think the point you make about getting pucks through, I think he's one of the best
Absolutely.
In the league at getting pucks through. He does that. He's played, I'm just looking up, he's played 705 games. He's just 29 years old. Every game has been with the Washington Capitals. He's on pace for, I mean, geez, 26 points in 17 games. I stink at math, but I can tell you it's more than a point a game. So he's pushing well over 100 points. You know, this could be an epic season for him. He has this wonderful, and this goes to your point, Bob, about how he is on the ice. Off the ice, too, is kind of a nonchalant kind of gait to his walk and just kind of, yeah, shrugs his shoulder. I don't think people realize how big he is, too. He's 6'3", 200, almost 220 pounds. So he can handle the ice time. He can handle the physical play. He's been beautiful this year. And this team, RJ and fellas, just continues. They've impressed me. Their goaltending's been all right.
I was going to say, let's not forget about Volpe. He's in a contract year, by the way, and he had a slow start.
I was gonna bring that up too. His numbers are very pedestrian.
No, but they've been better lately.
They have been. But it's, you know, to see a team that's 12-2-3, you wouldn't expect to see a goalie with an .895 save percentage, getting to start more often than not.
Do you guys agree? Would you agree with this assessment that Holtby reminds me at times of Chris Osgood with the old Detroit Red Wings teams, that he wasn't the best goalie in the league, but he was the best goalie for that team? I get that same kind of vibe and take, and the guys on, you know, he's a different bird, is Holtby, in the sense, I mean, he's just got a different way about him, but he's very approachable, very amenable. I just think I don't consider him the best goalie in the league. I don't. I know a couple of years ago people were saying, oh, he's the best goalie. I just don't. But I think he, for that team, where they're at, he's the best goalie for them.
I don't know if I would make that comparison necessarily with a guy like Osgood. The other thing that I'm interested to see when the Bruins do face off against the Capitals is what does that reconstituted D looks like? You know, you add Radko Gudas to the mix. That's a different element on the back end. You've already got Orlov. You got John Carlson. Michael Kempney is back in the lineup. That was a way under the radar pickup a couple of years ago when they won the Stanley Cup. He played some huge minutes for the team, and he's off to a great start.
Okay, why wouldn't you compare him to Osgood? You got to give me a reason.
I just think that
I think
he has
better.
Greater ability. I think back in the day, if you were selecting a World Cup of Hockey team or an Olympic team, Braden Holtby was a part of that team. Chris Osgood would not necessarily at that time been one of those goalies who would have been on the team.
I think he's a very good goalie. I just don't think he's a top, you know.
Yeah,
three,
we're a little biased because he owned the Bruins for several years.
Yes, yeah, he died. He still's got a mortgage on many of those. You're right, but I think look, he's a wonderful guy. I think he's a heck of a goaltender. I'm not taking anything away. I'm just saying, from a star perspective, if you had to pick a team, he wouldn't be one of the top five. I don't think
so. Maybe. If go back a year. Year plus, so they, and I know that he was awful at the end of the season, and then eventually they go on to win the cup, right? Would you have said if you put a comparison out there, would you take Holtby or Rask?
Well, the winning of the cup,
yeah, right.
Would at that time would sway you to Holtby.
Would you take Holtby over Price? I mean, like, so just make comparisons. I mean, who would you compare him to? So who would you take ahead of him?
He's a different style. He's a different style goalie than a lot. You know, he's more old school.
Okay.
In his way, I'm trying to think. Who would I take ahead of him?
Yeah.
I would take Tuukka Rask ahead of him. I absolutely would.
Would you take Carey Price?
I would take Carey Price over him. I'm going through my mental list. Would I take Marc-Andre Fleury? I'd maybe take Fleury over him. I would.
Bobrovsky.
Not yet.
No, I'm not saying age-wise. I'm just saying as a player.
I know. I'm saying not yet. I'm saying not yet because Bobrovsky's still, you know, the Panthers have started to, you know, get points, but he's been inconsistent. I'd maybe put them on that
same
plane.
Take Vasilevsky over him, right?
I would take Vasilevsky over him, yeah. Yeah, I would.
Talking to Billy Jaffe, joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. There's some teams around the league that you could look at and say probably underperforming a bit. Do you think there are some coaches on the hot seat as we're more than a month into the season now?
I definitely think that they've the seat warmer on, right? Everybody's got those in their car now, the seat warmers. I think certain ones are at the level three, maybe two. You know, I mean, what are they going to do in Minnesota with Bruce Boudreau? I mean, Billy Guerin right now I don't think is going to make a move. But what ends up happening with this team as the season goes on and on, I don't see them getting significantly better. I just don't. I don't think they have the horses whatsoever for it. So do you play out the stretch with Bruce Boudreau and his contract, or do you try and move somebody? I guess it depends on how the team responds and how they, you know, what they continue to do. You know, you guys just saw, you were in, you know, Judd and Beers, you guys were in Detroit. I don't think Steve Yzerman right now wants to do anything with Jeff Blashill, but they can't afford to go through another 1-11-1 stretch. You know, they eventually something's going to, you know, push is going to come to shove, and it's definitely warm there's no question about it. And it's not his guy either, right? Stevie Yzerman didn't hire him, so that would be something. And then the other guy that there's conversation about, and I know he signed an extension a couple of years ago, last year, I mean, for what, 2 years, is John Hines in New Jersey, who I think he's a hell of a coach. It's just, you know, this team, perhaps, you know, you guys agree or disagree, maybe expectations were too high for this team based on off-season acquisitions and drafting. But the team hasn't really been able to do well. They're on a road trip. They just lost their last two games. I mean, that's got to be warmer. Maybe not hot, but that's got to be a warm seat there too.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that comes down to expectations, not just of the fan base, but you know, how good does management think their team is? I would guess, you know, in particular in New Jersey, they looked at that and said, we don't expect to be third from the bottom in the Eastern Conference. Nope. At this point.
Not with the money that the owners agreed to, you know, take on with, especially a guy like P.K. Subban. But, you know, they skate hard, they play hard. They've got that potentially messy situation with Taylor Hall there. I don't know. Doesn't feel like he's going to re-sign there. I mean, what do I know? They could throw a boatload of cash at him that he's going to get more years and perhaps more money there than anywhere else. So when it's all said and done, but they've got a lot of things to take care of, and on the ice is one of them too. They're just not great. They're not producing right now.
They're playing PK Subban 24 minutes a night. Not a chance. Not a chance. No way.
They don't have much else on the back end. You're right. They don't have much else
in the
back.
Andy Green, Damon Severson, both better players. Both better.
Not making $9 million.
Hey, last week we were talking about surprise teams, or, you know, teams in the – I forget what it was. I think it was teams in the East there. And you said, oh, Buffalo's not on your list. And they've won one out of their last six. What's the real Sabres?
I think you're starting to see it.
That's why I said I'd reserve judgment until I play a few more games.
Yeah, I really think you're starting to see it. I think, you know, they've got some great individual skill up front. You know, I know I like the acquisition for them of Marcus Johansson, but he's a wonderful complementary player, and he's been glue for their, you know, he's been the glue guy, as you guys know, for their young Swedish players there. I look, when it's all said and done, I still look at their goaltending, and I think Carter Hutton is a really good backup, a very good 1B scenario. I don't think he's a 1A. I just don't. And you know, they're playing him a lot, and Dahlin's playing better in front of him. But, you know, they're getting, but they're not nowhere near there. And Kruger's given them the the communication factor has been really good there, I'm told. The accountability factor has been very good. The buy-in. But I just, when it's all said and done, the sum of the parts, they got some really, I mean, Skinner can be, you know, a highlight, individual highlight reel. Eichel as well. And he stepped up his game so far this year statistically. But when it's all said and done, I think this is them, the real, more of the real them. I find that if they battle for a playoff spot this year, Bobby, I'll be very impressed.
All right, Philadelphia Flyers are going to be in town to take on the Bruins tomorrow. Give us a quick primer on Philadelphia so far this season.
Well, Philadelphia is a team that, you know, first of all, they play tonight in Toronto. I believe that's a 7 o'clock game, so then they'll fly to Boston for tomorrow's 7 o'clock game. They're a team that has been inconsistent this year. They've been better at home than they've been on the road. It might be a little deceiving. I was going through their stuff, having been at the NHL Network this week, and looking at some of their games. Some of their home games that they've gotten, that when they've played, they've gotten the backups. Actually, against Vegas, they had the backup to the backup. I think it was Oscar Dansk, the kid that played that game. So they had a few more wins there. I mean, they've won their last two. They beat Carolina, pretty good team. Montreal, they did beat with Carey Price in OT. It still comes down to this with this team. You know, look, they've got Giroux. We know that he's a hell of a player. Voracek, I think he's having a harder time keeping up with the pace. I like some of their younger pieces. I like Travis Konechny a lot. Provorov's been okay. He's been inconsistent, but I like Sanheim on the back end. What's their goaltending going to be? And to me, they're... And we'll see it tomorrow. Alain Vigneault, their new coach there, has brought in a style that he played similar to New York, and there's a real kind of separation between D and forwards. A lot of stretch plays, a lot of turnovers happen because of it. I think they can be exploited in that area.
Well, from the goaltending perspective, I mean, that's, you know, they've been the question in Philadelphia for, you know,
ever.
Since Ron Hextall was there.
A couple of decades, maybe three. You know, the hope is that Carter Hart is going to be the guy.
889 save percentage.
Yeah, I mean, it's young guy, though. I mean, he's getting, you know, it's very early.
It is, but they're also, on the other hand, they're also asking a lot. And the question we, you know, asked is, are they asking too much? Are they going to do damage? I don't think they've done damage yet. What did Judd say? 880, 889, whatever it is, save percentage?
Yeah.
He can't stay at that all year. I don't think you keep your, a world-class goaltender, at least potential world-class goaltender, at that save percentage all year and think that that's a good thing for him. But I'm no goalie expert. You have Brian Elliott there, who I think is slotted as a very, you know, he's a good backup. I think you have confidence in that. But if you're asking him to be your starter, I think we've seen that's not really optimal. The question becomes, you go 1A, 1B with these guys, or do you keep making Carter Hart more of your starter? I haven't seen a scheduled, who's scheduled to start tonight for Philadelphia, but, you know, you're going to see one of those two guys. Obviously, I don't see one of them playing back-to-back.
All right, Billy, as always, appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. See you tomorrow at the rink.
All right, there is Billy Jaffe. You can catch him on Nesson. They've got a full hour pregame before the game tomorrow. Judd, Bob, thank you very much, as always, and we'll look forward to hearing you guys on the call tomorrow night.
Sounds good.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.